Can industry stand to spend more on climate investments? And why are 20 of the world's most vulnerable nations threatening to stop paying for their debts? Welcome to the Climate Recap from the Beckosphere Climate Corner, your go-to place for international and U.S.-based climate news. I'm Becky Hogue, a climate communicator. Today is Wednesday, October 19th. Let's jump right into today's news. I feel like we've had some extreme weather event reprieve for the last week or so, but don't worry, it's back. I hope all of my Beckospherians are staying safe out there. Let's start in Africa. Nigeria is experiencing its worst flooding event in a decade, which has killed over 600 people and injured 2,400 so far. 1.4 million people have been displaced. This is due to two man-made issues. Nigeria's neighbor Cameroon releasing water from a northern dam, which flooded Nigerian communities downstream. Another dam was meant to be constructed on the Nigerian side of the river to avoid this, but that never happened. And then climate change increases how much moisture air can hold and subsequently dump during rain events. It also dries out the land, so it can't absorb as much water. Like the rest of the African continent, Nigeria has contributed next to nothing towards climate change. Nigeria's Minister of Humanitarian Affairs said state and local governments and communities were warned ahead of time this could have happened, but they didn't heed that warning. All of these factors have resulted in a tragedy in Africa's most populous country. The flooding has impacted 27 of Nigeria's 36 states. Meanwhile, the triple La Nina has already shown its continued fury across eastern Australia. Several meteorologists point to climate change potentially making longer La Nina events more common. There's a study below on that if you would like to learn more. Thousands of people in Australia have been displaced. In Victoria alone, flooding has inundated or isolated as many as 34,000 homes. Most rivers and dams are at full capacity right now. A deluge this time of year is highly unusual. This is wildfire season right now. Australia has warmed 1.5 degrees Celsius since 1910, which is above the global average. And in the U.S., the Pacific Northwest is experiencing a never-ending summer. The region is at the end of its third heatwave in 2 years. Seattle, Washington broke its record for the hottest day experienced this late in the season in 130 years when it reached 88 degrees Fahrenheit or 31 degrees Celsius on Sunday. The heat resulted in several ongoing wildfires in the area, though hopefully the rain is coming soon. Portland, Oregon stayed over 80 degrees Fahrenheit for 5 days straight. Vancouver, Washington, Olympia, Oregon, and Hillsboro, Oregon all hit 85 degrees or above this weekend. This heat can also be explained by the rare triple La Nina. It's important to remember that the buildings in this area don't usually have air conditioning, making events like these more deadly. It seems like the heat wave has now traveled down south because it's currently 84 degrees in Monterey right now, which is very unusual for this time of year. Los Angeles hit 95 degrees Fahrenheit or 35 degrees Celsius today too. The heat is only expected to stay for 1 day before it drops about 10 degrees. Time for the climate studies. The longer we let climate change worsen, the less the U.S. will be able to handle economic damages domestically. This is particularly true for hurricanes, according to a new study published in Environmental Research Letters. The study compared the disaster responses for the 2017 Hurricane Harvey and the 2022 Hurricane Ian in 7,000 regional economic sectors with more than 1.8 million supply chain connections. Here's why this matters. Quote, at a certain warning level, other countries have to step in to supply the necessary goods for production, which gives U.S. economic sectors a competitive disadvantage. This doesn't mean that these events will fully destabilize the U.S. economy, but it will just impact it more than it used to, which would require some outside help. One of the most vulnerable sectors is mining and quarry, which includes fossil fuels, ironically. When supply chains are disrupted, customers usually experience higher costs. So if we don't secure our supply chains in a climate-conscious way, the U.S. economy will continue to become more vulnerable. That being said, scientists are working on improving their hurricane prediction techniques, particularly to predict hurricane intensity levels better. Hurricane Ian ended up being much stronger than anticipated at first, and that is very likely due to climate change. Meanwhile, Goldman Sachs recently told Axios that big industry could stand to spend far more money on climate-friendly investments than they do without jeopardizing their financial stability or shareholder rewards. Crazy. They must have seen the billions of windfall profits too. The researchers applied the spare capacity concept to green investment, defining it as what's available to deploy, quote, without stretching balance sheets or eliminating return of capital to shareholders. The private sector is expected to spend $900 billion more on climate, water, and sustainability infrastructure investments over the next decade compared to 2016 to 2020 averages, which does sound like a lot until you hear that the analysts found an additional $900 billion that could also go towards that effort, but isn't. This spare money is mainly found in fossil fuels, metals and mining, software, automobile, and semiconductor sectors. Quote, not all industries have spare capacity to increase investment without taking on equity or debt, but some do. This means other sectors may need greater stimulus to ramp up investments versus what is already on track. But in some more positive news, the independent research group Rystad Energy forecasted global investments in renewables to be higher than fossil fuel investments for the first time ever, thanks to soaring gas prices. The analysts project clean energy to rake in $494 billion in 2022 versus $446 billion for oil and gas. In addition to being cheaper, utility-scale solar and wind projects are appealing because they can potentially pay back the investment costs in less than a year. This is most likely to happen in Germany, France, Italy, and the UK. Rystad said right now is a good time to get those clean energy projects up and running, especially in Europe. And that study brings us into the climate victories. 20 of the world's most vulnerable nations are considering halting their loan repayments worth collectively $685 billion. They are instead calling for a debt-to-nature swap, meaning they won't have to pay this debt if the money is invested in conservation efforts. This would help reset the bad cycle of countries not being able to adapt to climate change because they're in a lot of debt, then experiencing extreme weather events that require them to get further into debt to recover. Many of these loans come from the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. These issues will likely come to a head during the big UN climate conference, COP27, in Egypt next month. In the UK, an all-party group of MPs gave PM Truss a 10-point environmental wish list to tackle the climate crisis and biodiversity crisis. The group has been backed by nature and environmental charities, as well as the renewable energy and electric vehicle industries, and many in local governments. The list they propose includes tripling the capacity of floating offshore wind energy, restoring 30% of the UK's marshlands and seagrass meadows, and expanding energy companies' obligations to make homes more efficient. The group said that most of these bullet points would be easy to get past Parliament. The MPs are also calling on the Prime Minister to create a net zero devolution deal to cover all the UK's devolved governments and to use the Environmental Act to introduce ambitious targets for environmental restoration. They want a new office for carbon removal to regulate carbon offsets and for more funding to go towards helping farmers cut their greenhouse gas emissions. Germany announced it would extend the lifespan of all three of its nuclear power plants until April 15th at the longest. The letter with this announcement also came with a new law to increase energy efficiency and the construction of a new gas plant to produce blue hydrogen. Well, you win some, you lose some, I guess. Meanwhile, Mexico's president outlined the country's renewable energy goals on Monday. His plan is to expand solar energy capacity and start producing lithium for electric vehicle batteries and other technologies. President Obrador recently nationalized the lithium industry, and he hopes to make Mexico the main supplier for this mineral in Latin America. Mexico's Latin America's largest automaker, too, and the Mexican government wants to boost the sale of electric vehicles from 5% to 50% by 2050. Lithium production will take place in the Sonora province. The solar will be used to power the coastal Sonora city of Puerto Penasco. Let's talk about carbon capture and storage technology now, or CCS. The Global CCS Institute reported that the number of CCS projects has grown by 44% over the last 12 months. It's being used by companies to filter air from power plants, steel mills, cement plants, and other industrial sites. 61 projects were announced this year so far, bringing the total number of facilities running, under construction, or under development to 196. 30 are currently running. When all of those plants are running, they should be able to take up about 244 million metric tons of carbon dioxide per year. That is still well below the nearly 1,300 million metric tons needed to be uptaken by this technology if we want to keep warming well below 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, according to the International Energy Agency. But this is likely to just be the beginning of an exponential trend. And now we move into the climate fails. Remember, don't get despondent, get mad. Hollywood is failing to recognize how amazing climate change could be as a plot device or setting. A new study by the nonprofit environmental firm Good Energy and the USC Norman Lear Center calculated how often climate change and environmental crises were a part of almost 37,500 scripts from 2016 to 2020. It found that only 2.8% used any climate change keywords, only 0.6% featured the term climate change, only 10% of those that depicted extreme weather events tied them to climate change, and only 12% that depicted these events tied them to fossil fuels. The study found that CBS and HBO Max are doing the best at bringing the climate crisis into scripts. 7.5% and 6.4% of CBS's scripts and HBO Max's scripts, respectively, are climate related. Good Energy actually works to bring climate change into more scripts, so if that is of interest to you, definitely check them out. Switching gears quite a bit now, the Iraq Environment Minister admitted that oil operations are responsible for high cancer rates in nearby communities. This was in response to an in-depth BBC Arabic investigation that found leukemia rates rose by 20% from 2015 to 2018 in communities near fossil fuel sites mainly owned by Eni and BP. The communities suspect this is due to flaring, which is when oil companies burn off methane gas because they didn't prioritize capturing it to be used for more energy. That releases black soot, carbon dioxide, and methane. Methane is 84 times better at trapping in heat than CO2 for the first 20 years they're in the atmosphere. And benzene can also be released during flaring and is likely the source of the cancer. While Iraq technically has a rule that states that oil drilling must be at least 6 miles or 10 kilometers away from communities, the BBC saw facilities less than 250 meters from people's doors. The Minister of Oil's statement denied BBC Arabic's findings. The environmental minister admitted that the oil minister used to not let his staff carry out pollution monitoring checks, but insists that things have gotten better since 2018, now that there's better cooperation between ministers. Drama. In Europe, NGOs and scientists are concerned that the looming energy crisis paired with the EU relaxing logging rules could result in a very dark winter for the continent's forests. The experts are already seeing sensitive forests dwindling and illegal logging operations increasing. These ecosystems are already particularly fragile after the historically hot summer. Relying on this form of biomass for energy results in biodiversity loss and an increase in air pollution and greenhouse gas emissions. Forests currently act as the EU's main carbon sink too, which means it takes up a lot of the carbon dioxide. Increased logging is the worst in Central and Eastern Europe. Half of Romania still heats its homes using wood and is already subject to an infringement procedure for not tamping down illegal logging activity. Slovakia has already recorded a rise in logging activities ahead of the winter. Hungary, Latvia, Lithuania, and Poland, which are all heavily reliant on Russian fossil fuels, were some of the countries to reduce its provisions to protect the forests in favor of more biomass production. If you are in one of these countries and have the option to, avoid using wood for energy and heating. It's very bad for your health and the health of the planet. Let's finish off today's episode by talking about a new study that could help inform Texas about its environmental justice hotspots. In the U.S., an interdisciplinary team of researchers received a $66 million grant from the Department of Energy, or DOE, to investigate where extreme weather events and climate justice issues intertwine in the Gulf Coast Texas cities of Beaumont and Port Arthur. One of the things that they're going to look at is how environmental justice issues like industrial pollution factors into extreme weather events like flooding. One of the researchers explained it like this, quote, "On our team, we have a few urban planners and a few landscape architects who understand how toxins move through floodwaters and can estimate which parts are going to potentially be more exposed to toxin-laden floodwaters. From that, we can see which communities already have health concerns. Maybe there's areas that have high rates of asthma, and they would need or should get mitigation first for some of the issues so that we do our climate adaptation in an equitable way. This team is part of one of the three urban integrated field laboratories funded by the DOE to, quote, inform equitable climate and energy solutions that can strengthen community scale resilience across urban landscapes. The other ones are in Chicago, Illinois, and Baltimore, Maryland. And that was your climate recap for Wednesday, October 19th. If you like the work I do, please follow this podcast, give it a 5-star rating, leave a review, and consider checking out the Becosphere Climate Corner YouTube channel. Remember to talk about the climate crisis every single day and to support your local news organizations. Bye for now.